Running your own business can feel isolating, but you don't have to figure it all out alone. Join a free guest session inside the Smashing the Plateau community to get fresh ideas and real solutions to your biggest business challenge. Spots are limited. Reserve yours now at smashingtheplateau.com/guest. That's smashingtheplateau.com/guest.
Some are completely terrified to the point of having suicidal thoughts about not knowing if they can go on without work, not feeling like they're worthwhile as a human being, not thinking that their family will respect them anymore or value them anymore, even if they have enough money to go forward.
Today's guest is Ken Gorfinkel, a clinical psychologist with a unique perspective on one of life's underexplored transitions. What happens when the work that's defined you for decades starts to fade away? How do you maintain your sense of identity and worth when you're no longer in the thick of your career? In this conversation, we dive deep into the psychological landscape of late career transitions, exploring the fears, the opportunities, and the unexpected discoveries that emerge when you begin to step back from professional life. Ken shares insights on navigating uncertainty, redefining success, and finding new sources of meaning beyond the paycheck. Whether you're years away from this transition or right in the middle of it, you'll discover practical wisdom about cultivating community, embracing accumulated experience, and designing a next chapter that feels authentic and fulfilling. This is a conversation about transformation, identity, and what it really means to thrive in the next chapter of your professional journey. Now let's welcome Ken Gorfinkel. Ken is a clinical psychologist and owner of Common Sense Therapy, a private psychotherapy practice in New York. His career transitioned from decades of work with medical patients in hospitals to a full-time private practice in 2016. As his own practice slowly winds down, he finds himself caring for many individuals at the late stages of their careers. Retirement has become an outmoded idea now that there are myriad ways to stay engaged in meaningful work. Ken, welcome back to the show.
Nice to be back, David.
It's great to have you on again. So the last times that you were on Smashing the Plateau in 2019 and 2021, we discussed the trauma of job loss, and we had a particular focus on mid-career job loss. Recently, you and I were discussing another transition in one's career. What happens toward the end of the career as you phase out of work, you know, maybe abruptly, maybe not so abruptly. And as I mentioned in the introduction, as your practice has been winding down, you're also working with clients who are at the later stages of their careers. What have you been observing about the differences between mid-career job loss, which is pretty abrupt, versus what a lot of people seem to be going through now as they're in the later stages of their career?
There are some similarities and some differences. You know, the similarity is that people, especially men more than women, identify themselves by their careers and their work. And it's hard for them to maintain that identity when they don't have work to kind of fill that need to know who they are and what they're all about. And so whatever it was you were doing for your career, whether it was an accountant or a lawyer or a mechanic or whatever your job was, if you're not doing that so much anymore, then it becomes a question of who am I and how do I define myself? What am I all about? Am I a has-been, what I used to do, or am I still a somebody? And that can be pretty hard. And so the similarity is there. If you lose your job suddenly in mid-career, it's like a trauma. It's a real shock. But even if you begin to wind down late in your career, or if you begin to come to an age where your company wants you to retire or needs you to retire, then you're facing similar question of, well, who am I going to be when I'm doing it less and less? And how am I going to define myself? And am I going to still be a valid person now that I don't have that label to hang my hat on to define myself.
Yeah. And for people who have the option to not stop work abruptly, are there advantages or disadvantages to somebody who just stops abruptly?
There are, because if you have the luxury of being able to slow down and not stop abruptly, you can ease out of that identity. You can begin to think about, as you do less and less, what it is you liked about your work and what you really were tired of and what was boring and what was still interesting about it. And I think I can speak for myself, because I'm in that stage of my own career, that I feel like I have more space and more time and more people to talk about what it is I really still enjoy about what I'm doing. And I feel like I have the option of doing more of what I like and do less of what I found kind of more tedious about the work.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. One of the things that, at least in our community, that we talk about with members who are often younger than the demographic we're now talking about, is about how to do more of what you love and less of what you don't want to do, and still get paid both what you're worth and also what you need to support your lifestyle.
Right. There's another part to this that I've only recently begun to think about. So I've been a psychologist now for many, many years, several decades, and we are always honing our skills. It's never like, oh, you learn how to turn a monkey wrench at age 25 and now you know how to do it. You know, the tools evolve, the experience enhances your skill level. You learn new skills and you gain experience from all the different types of work that comes your way all these years. And so I feel like I'm really glad that I have a chance to both slow down and think about what I've learned and how much I still have to offer my clients that I didn't have 10, 15 years ago with, you know, the experience of all those years. And so I think my patients appreciate that about having a more experienced therapist, somebody who's been in the field a long time. They look to the work not just for garden variety, I need help with depression or anxiety, but they look for lifetime experience and what you might call wisdom, you know, from from experience. That's a really good feeling. And because I've seen some people through many, many years, I've held on to some clients for decades. I've seen them through life cycle events. I've seen them through, you know, marriages and births and deaths of family members and divorces and losing jobs and so on and getting new jobs. And so I'm really glad to see them through all those life changes. And I think they're glad to have somebody walk through them with them, with the benefit of all my life experience and professional experience.
Well, using that lens, Ken, is there something that one can do that will connect your identity to your wisdom so that your self-worth is less about who's paying you, how much they're paying you, when they're paying you, and more about who you are as a person and what you have gained over the course of your lifetime?
Yeah, I'm not sure how to answer that, except that I'm beginning to see more gratitude both ways. Gratitude from my clients for the quality of the work that they do with me. And I'm feeling more gratitude for the chance to work with these people at key points in their lives. I think it's fair to say that the work acquires a new level of intimacy, a new level of connectedness about knowing each other. I feel more comfortable about them knowing me as a full person, not just as this two-dimensional shrink, you know, that listens and goes, There's understanding both ways.
And is there something that you're finding that your patients, with your guidance, are able to gain in terms of intimacy in their work with the people they serve?
I hope so. You know, it's, in other words, it's something that we can talk about openly. And so they can examine that and ask themselves what it is that they're still getting out of their work as they wind down. You know, there are different types of reactions I'm seeing amongst the people, you know, 65 and up, who are looking at the end stages of their careers. Some are completely terrified to the point of having suicidal thoughts about not knowing if they can go on without work, not feeling like they're worthwhile as a human being, not thinking that their family will respect them anymore or value them anymore, even if they have enough money to go forward. There are people who are afraid that if they're not still bringing in a paycheck, that I know it's completely irrational, but that they'll be rejected. And then there are others who are afraid that they've kind of lost their professional mojo, their creative juices, their ability to think in, you know, innovative ways about their craft or about their work, that the young people who they're handing it off to have and they don't have anymore, that they're going to feel like they're literally out to pasture, like the old cows that are not producing milk anymore. They feel very sad and very hopeless about it, some of them. And so even though a number of them have other things that certainly could, you know, take up their interest, you know, like grandchildren and family and friends, others don't, particularly some of the men. They didn't spend a lot of energy in their careers developing community, developing friendships, developing new interests. They hate the idea of hobbies. They all say, hobbies? Who has a hobby? You know, it sounds like, what, woodwork? Arts and crafts? They just don't think in those terms. I don't think I do either. You know, I think there are interests, but I don't think there are hobbies that people look at.
So if you're either terrified or you think that you've lost your professional mojo, what can you do?
Well, one of the things that I have worked on with a few of my older clients is to really lean into their family relationships, to rediscover them. And I've even coached family members, grown children, spouses, sometimes even to join a session, or I've kind of coached them to have talks with those family members to kind of redefine or to revisit what's important and how they value, and usually it's a male, to value their dad, you know, or their husband, now that he's got a different lifestyle, now that he's not working. Some of the spouses find it really daunting because they feel like they don't want to take care of the guy like another kid, you know, who's needy and needs to be fed and entertained. And so they often need to be encouraged to get a life. I have one guy who I'm actually making good progress with because he joined the board of his synagogue. I think he's president of the board now of his synagogue. So it is giving him a new sense of meaning and volunteer work that he didn't have much when he was a full-time workaholic, frankly. It's all he did was work, 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 worked extra hours, didn't get home much. But he's a kind of guy who needs a purpose to get out of bed every day, you know, otherwise he feels useless. And working around the house just doesn't cut it, doesn't cook, things like that. But having things to do in the community were really important in that case.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned in some cases, financial well-being isn't a factor. What can somebody do in the case where financial well-being is a factor or at least a major fear?
Yeah, this is something that I've taught myself and worked with my clients to be more open about, is to talk about financial planning, talked about wills, about, you know, all the things that attorneys talk about when you're doing estate planning. I've encouraged some people to write an ethical will to their family to kind of lay out what's important to them as they get on in age, and to learn to be more open about what their fears are about their financial limitations. You know, when you talk to a financial planner, they'll often model their finances and give you an estimate of, if you spend so and so number of dollars per year, you'll run out of money by the time you're 95 or 100 or whatever, hopefully old enough that you're gonna get by. But these models scare people too, because they actually put down in black and white the way that you could run out of money if you spend money a certain way. And so the idea that you might have to have a budget and set some limits on how much you spend really scares people a lot. They don't like to talk about it with their family. And part of the work is to encourage them to talk about that with their families.
Yeah. So if they do talk about it and they do come up with a financial plan and they do have a long-term budget, what can the result be?
Well, ideally, it's going to be some peace of mind, but it's quite amazing how irrational people get and fearful people get. I think aggravated by the uncertainty of these times politically and socially of, you know, the cost of health care and questions about whether Social Security is a secure thing and whether your investments are going to lose their value. These are uncertainties, and uncertainty is the main ingredient of anxiety in my field. And so we talk about those uncertainties as ways to understand the sources of anxiety and depression and ways to grapple with it, learning to embrace uncertainty as part of life. It's not something that's being thrown at you. It's something you've always lived with, but you just have to see this uncertainty as just another aspect of what you've always dealt with, you know, in your emotional life.
Yeah. Look, I'm not a therapist, but I like to ask people two questions. One is, what's the worst thing that could possibly happen? And people are often afraid to actually answer that. But when they do, then I say, okay, so if that happens, what will you do? And they'll usually have an answer for the second one. I say, okay, so now you have a plan.
Yes, I like that. Yeah. Yeah. And the worst thing that they talk about, if they run out of money, they talk about a few things. Mostly it's shame and embarrassment in front of their friends and family and community, that they compare themselves to others, and they always compare themselves negatively when they're anxious about it. So, you know, I try to talk to them about, so you have a talk with your spouse or your neighbor and you say you ran out of money. What are they going to say and think? Are they going to think less of you? And they're afraid it will, but when they really talk about it, they realize it's not necessarily true. They worry about being a burden on their adult children. And, you know, that there's every reason to believe that their kids will manage it if they have to the best of their ability. But again, it's a source more of shame and embarrassment and humiliation for them than it is an actual question of how will I put food in my mouth. And I think being on public assistance, needing Medicaid or Medicare, Social Security, those are things that are pretty tough on people, even though, you know, there is still somewhat of a social safety net for people.
Right. It's not, there are lots of things one could say about the social safety net in the United States.
Yeah.
But it's better than zero.
It's better than zero, you know, and I went through it with my parents, as many people did, and I'm always glad to share with my clients how I dealt with it when the time came with my parents, how they did run out of money and went on Medicaid, and it worked until the end of their lives. And so it's not as dark and horrible a picture as you might imagine.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely beats the alternative. So, you know, going back to someone who is currently working, particularly working for oneself, where there's maybe more flexibility about winding down versus a job, where often if you're in a full-time job, the only option is going from 100% of work and 100% of your income to zero.
Yeah.
from that job source. When you have your own business, you have greater flexibility about perhaps you wound things up and maybe you have ways to wind things down much more slowly than somebody who has a job. You know, maybe you could summarize some of the key things to think about and that you might be able to do so that you approach this next stage with perhaps less fear in it, or maybe not so much less fear, but less anxiety than you might have otherwise.
A couple of things that I think about, you know, this partly is owing to the COVID years when things went, you know, remote, as they did for most all of us. I've been able to be more intentional about how many hours I want to work in person versus remotely now. And I'm speaking to you from home right now. I'm going to be spending part of my Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays in the office for the foreseeable future. But I can see myself going down from 3 days in the office to 2 days sometime soon and having the rest of my work on the third day from home and then maybe one day. So that's kind of an interesting thought. And how will that look and how will that change my daily life experience? It will change my cost outlay if I'm not renting the office as many days a week. So that's one part of it. The other part for me is that therapy is a fee-for-service model where I get paid by the session. But I have the option, or I've begun to segue a little bit into doing some consulting work where I get some gigs that I can pick up ad hoc from time to time, which are interesting and a break and a real difference from doing, you know, what's kind of become more of a routine, you know, of seeing patients one day after another or 1 hour after another. So I can begin to pick up those consultations, supervision of mentoring young people, giving talks, giving lectures, you know, being sent, as I was a couple of summers ago, on a talk in Europe. These are things that are really fun and novel and interesting for me. So I can begin to look into pitching those things if I like. And as I do that, it begins to be more and more attractive to do less of the routine work and more of the kind of occasional gig work, if you like, that begins to kick in. But to do that, it's a little bit like a reprise of what it was like to first go out in private practice, that it's no longer, will I get enough patients? But now it's, will I have enough ideas of consulting jobs to do? And the answer for me right now is I don't really need them. I only just like them. So it's a great situation to have, that I can pick up what I want to pick up and not pick up what I don't.
Yeah. So, you know, not just being conscious of ways you might be able to shift or maybe decrease your current business model, but maybe there are some new opportunities that could be the next phase and still provide some paid work.
Yeah, although I'm finding, at least in my case, that it's fine if some of it is unpaid. You know, I can do volunteer work in the community. I can give back to some of the nonprofit organizations that I've been interested in and supporting, you know, that Doris has been on the board of and so on. And that's just a lot of fun for me. I've done some of that kind of free consulting that uses my professional skills. I think it sometimes turns into people hearing that I have these skills that then they want to hire me for something, but I'm not looking for work. You know, people hear me give a talk and three people come up to me and say, oh, I'd really like to hear more about that and maybe use more of your skills. It's a nice feeling. Nice to be able to say, no, I'm not really available for that right now, but it's a good problem to have.
Right. And then the occasion where you say yes.
Occasionally I say yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's great to know about all these options. And I want to thank you for kind of triggering the idea of a shift in what we often talk about on Smashing the Plateau, which is, you know, the transition from employment to entrepreneurship and how do you make the entrepreneurship work? And this is, you know, a slight pivot on that. How do you make the entrepreneurship idea work as your life changes and maybe you want to do a little less entrepreneurship in the future?
Yeah.
Or maybe zero entrepreneurship. So yeah, thank you for triggering this and leading to a great discussion. The last question I wanted to ask you before we close out is, how has community collaboration and peer support played a role in the success of the kinds of people we've been talking about making these transitions?
I think that the importance of friendship becomes a, you know, front and center issue for people. And for some people, it's really hard to cultivate those friendships. They need to be intentional about it. as I think I'm being in my life. And so we talk about that. I think about that a lot. The colleagues that were just work colleagues, some of them can become friends when you don't need to be collaborating at work anymore. And so that's a built-in thing that's available if you choose to tap into it. For other people, you know, it's more a matter of tapping into friends and family that you weren't paying much attention to, but they're there. And so many people of a certain age are looking for community and a social network that I guess it's the difference between, I saw an article in the paper about this, between catching up, let's call and catch up because we haven't spoken in 6 months, versus let's meet once a week or once a month and really hang out together on a regular basis and cultivate our friendship. That's a different stage of building community.
Right, right. So there's an intentional consistency to the engagement.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really like that distinction. So thank you for mentioning that. Ken, for anyone who wants to learn more about some of these topics and perhaps access any resources you might have or just learn more about you and get in touch with you, where's the best place to go?
Well, they can send me a message through my website at www.commonsensetherapy.com and send me a contact there.
Sounds great. Well, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to join us again on Smashing the Plateau and share some great insights about a really important topic. My guest today has been clinical psychologist with Common Sense Therapy, Ken Gorfinkel. Thank you, Ken, for joining us.
And it's been a pleasure, David.
Running your own business can feel isolating. That's why we created Smash Through Your Business Roadblocks, a live interactive session where experienced professionals bring real challenges and work through them together using the Smash framework. It's your chance to experience the Smashing the Plateau community, a space where corporate refugees support one another to keep moving forward. You'll leave with fresh momentum, clarity, and maybe even a few new allies in your corner. Guest spots are limited, so grab yours now at smashingtheplateau.com/guest. That's smashingtheplateau.com/guest.